Next is the Evening Home program, given on May 17, 1996, in Baltimore.
We're doing several nectar things each night. I've been reading a little bit from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, answering some questions that were asked at a previous disciples' meeting, and hearing some excerpts of Prabhupada's tapes. So, Chaitanya Charitamrita, we're on the Lord's tour of southern India. The point is to, why read such a small amount? I'm trying to impress on us the importance of reading these books, the pleasure and the substance of it for transcendental knowledge. When you get down to it, we read these books because our founder Acharya, our spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, said these are the main books to read. So, and Prabhupada, as a world preacher, he emphasized that Krishna consciousness was not Indian culture, but it was the nature of the soul of all living beings. And it was being proved, he was so happy to see. The people were taking it up all over because it was dormant. So, this isn't Bengali culture or Bengali religion or literature. It was with that in mind also that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that the day would come when people would study Bengali language just to learn to read this Chaitanya Charitamrita. That's quite a claim for the importance and the appeal that this book would have, how it would become, you know, world literature, transcendental literature. So we don't have to study Bengali literature, although if you do so, like Agraya Prabhu has done, then Prabhupada indicates that there's a special ecstasy can be felt. And Prabhupada says in his purport, he said, we're translating it in English and I don't know the result of this, but we're trying our best. So we think that what Prabhupada has done is certainly giving us access to the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya, which were written up by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. So we discussed a little some of the first activities of Lord Chaitanya on his tour, his meeting with the Korma Brahmin in Kurmakshetra, his curing the leper Vasudev. And then another chapter begins, and Lord Chaitanya is down by the river Godavari, in southern India, and chanting Hare Krishna on the bank of the river after bathing in the river. And to that spot comes the governor with great pomp, surrounded by his men and a band. And this is Ramananda Roy. So Lord Chaitanya immediately, of course, he's omniscient, and he understands who Ramananda Roy is. But also, he was informed by his newly converted disciple, the great logician, teacher, Vedanta Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, that when you go to South India, please see Ramananda Roy. You'll be very happy with him if you talk with him about Krishna. He's very learned. Before, I misunderstood him because he was a Vaishnava. I laughed at him. But now that I become a Vaishnava, by your grace, now I understand how great he was. Please don't miss him. Don't neglect him thinking he's a Shudra. So he had that strong recommendation to see him. But the real motive was that he had eternal relationship with Ramananda Roy. So this is intriguing. One of the extraordinary qualities of this literature, all the literature, Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, that you don't find in any other literature, whether it be fiction or religious scripture and so on, creative writing. All which are the Vedic teachings, which were realized and carried out by great souls and understood even by ordinary people. For example, that we have past lives, that our present lives are determining our future lives, transmigration of the soul. That's ABC knowledge. And beyond that, that eternal liberated souls have identities in different leelas. All these are very fascinating things which enable us to study the literature on different levels. And so we learn that the attraction of the sannyasi for the governor and the governor for the sannyasi was so very strong that they introduced each other and then embraced and fell unconscious together in a swoon of ecstatic love of Krishna. And Prabhupada explains in a short purport that actually they had natural love because Lord Chaitanya is Krishna, Supreme Personality of Godhead, appearing as a pure devotee. And Ramananda Roy, although appearing as a governor, is in his eternal identity the Srimati Vishakha, the gopi. And so there was a relationship between Krishna and Vishakha. Or, alternately, that Lord Chaitanya is known to be a combined form of Radha and Krishna. So taking it that way, that he's in the mood of Radharani, then he's meeting his friend, gopi friends, meeting Radharani and Vishakha. So, where else can you get such meaning, such mystic, esoteric revelation, but in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam. So, their embracing was quite surprising to the ordinary Brahmins and persons who were surrounding Ramananda Roy. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya and Ramananda Roy restricted their show of emotions. But they wanted to meet with each other another time. But one of the important points about their relationship that Prabhupada makes, and which is important for us, is the fact that their relationship transcended the social considerations. Because ordinarily a sannyasi, he shouldn't associate with Prabhupada calls pounds, shillings, persons. So, as he puts in one purport, one who is advanced in spiritual life should not associate with non-devotees, namely men in government service and men engaged in materialistic activity for sense gratification. So Ramananda Roy came under that category. But that's just a social consideration. So a person shouldn't be rejected if the person is low-born or in whatever social situation, or sex, woman, and so on. The real judgment of a person's worth is their Krishna consciousness. And Prabhupada says in one sentence, a low life means a life without Krishna consciousness. And that's a good line. We think of a low life, you think of somebody living in a poor neighborhood or different things that you would think of, low class, low life. And generally you don't think of a person who's wealthy or aristocratic, or like in this area near Washington, D.C., you wouldn't think of the President of the United States as low class or low life. But it says a low life means life without Krishna consciousness. High and low positions in society were calculated by considering a person's Krishna consciousness. This was the only consideration. Of course, even in India, sometimes they're so caste conscious that they don't use this standard. But Lord Chaitanya used this standard. He didn't care, even if a person was Muslim by birth or whatever. And that was Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's mood and Prabhupada's mood. So this is an important part of the relationship of Lord Chaitanya and Ramananda Roy, which is valuable for us. So it explains why Lord Chaitanya accepted him. Ramananda Roy is remarking about the fact that Lord Chaitanya is very kind to him. And he says, this is unusual. It is the general practice of all saintly people to deliver the fallen. Therefore, they go to people's houses, although they have no personal business there. So, as a saintly person might not be expected to meet with a businessman, similarly, a high-placed person materialistically might not be expected to associate with a beggar mendicant, or even see such a beggar. So Ramananda Roy, from his point of view, he's saying, I realize that when saintly persons take this position, they are not really to be looked down upon as an ordinary beggar, or like a truly worthless person who's lazy and is this parasite to society, doesn't produce anything. So in this connection, Prabhupada talks about his devotees and the book distribution. Devotees go door to door to introduce a book about Krishna consciousness so that people can become enlightened by reading. Formerly, brahmacharis and sannyasis used to beg from door to door. At the present moment, especially in Western countries, a person may be handed over to the police if he begs from door to door. In Western countries, begging is considered criminal. Members of the Krishna consciousness movement have no business begging. Instead, they work very hard to introduce some literatures about Krishna consciousness so that people can read them and be benefited. However, if one gives some contribution to a Krishna conscious man, he never refuses it. Even to have a transaction of selling a book, that's also considered low class, or people don't like it. Although Prabhupada said this would be distinguished from somebody who just says that, please give some money to our temple, which you could do in India. So therefore we make a transaction, a nice book. But that also is looked down upon. So Prabhupada defends the book distributor. He's not actually a beggar or a salesman. He's trying to benefit people. If others don't understand, at least the devotees should understand this is noble work. Then they exchange words of high praise for one another. Ramananda Roy describes Lord Chaitanya as the Supreme Personality of Godhead in different ways. And then the Lord replies, Sir, you are the best of the topmost devotees. Therefore, seeing you, everyone's heart is melted. So words like these, they're not just a flattery. We'll see in Bhagavatam and other places, devotees praise each other in high terms, especially devotees like this. We can't imitate this. The actual words he uses are Maha Bhagavata Uttama, the best of the topmost, or the best of the Mahabhagavatas. So these are words that should be carefully used, and we shouldn't imitate them or mock them or use them in jest. But neither should we think that when we read them that they're just using flattery, meaning not sincere, just saying something cheaply. Since we read such, I won't say flowery words, but since we read often such glorification and terms of greatness describing persons, we should understand it properly and use it in our own exchanges appropriately. But especially in reading, we should understand these two persons, they really felt like that toward each other. So, they've had this meeting, and that could be it. Okay, it was very nice to see you on the bank of the river, and then they go their ways. But they both want to get together again, and, there's an intense desire for this. Ramananda Roy asked the Lord to please stay 5 or 7 days to purify my mind. Although neither could tolerate each other's separation, they offered obeisances and departed. So, why did they want to be together? And what would they do when they came together? As we read in this chapter, to describe it externally, they talked. One chose to ask questions, and one answered the question. And they talked. They talked about Vedic Vaishnav philosophy. They talked about Krishna consciousness. But that was the act. They didn't go together to a baseball game or to a bar, or didn't go look for some girls, or drive around in a car, or whatever you want to think of that people, guys would do together. They talked about Krishna. And this exchange, this is one of the most, or perhaps the most significant exchange on the whole southern tour of Lord Chaitanya took. Because he heard the most intimate, finally, starting from the basic topics, he heard finally the most intimate topics of Radha and Krishna. And it's as if he learned them, he already knew them. But sometimes it's said that after this point, then Lord Chaitanya became merged in that mood himself. Just like after meeting Ishwara Puri, he made a big change to become ecstatic lover of Krishna and chanting Hare Krishna. So after this, he began to meditate more as in his mood of Srimati Radharani, accepting Ramananda Roy as a teacher or a sharer, one of the few people he could talk to about this, or be with and share this emotion. So it's they just talked, but what their talk was so significant. So this, I think we can take this for ourselves, that we should also talk when we come together about Krishna and about Chaitanya Charitamrita and Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam. And we can be satisfied with that and not have to do other things in the name of entertainment or relief. Now I'll just read one last paragraph of this Chaitanya Charitamrita section. I've already hinted, and you already know, how these talks develop and what they lead to. I've also written a book that's at the printers now. It's called From Cropper to Touchstone, Favorite Selections from Chaitanya Charitamrita. And it's a reference, the title is a reference to these talks, and that there's about 5 chapters in the books on these talks. This phrase is used at the end of the talk by Prabhupada. He said the talks proceed from copper, just like the different metals increase in value, and copper and silver and gold and so on, and finally a touchstone. So similarly, these talks begin with talks about Varnashram Dharma, and they go up to pure love of God, and then higher and higher. So this is what it's about. And therefore, the verse says, Ramananda Roy approached Lord Sri Chaitanya and offered his respectful obeisances, and the Lord embraced him. Then they both began to discuss Krishna in a secluded place. Purport. The word raha stane, in a secluded place, is very significant. Talks about Krishna and his pastimes, especially his pastimes in Vrindavan, and his dealings with the gopis, are all very confidential. They are not subject matter for public discussion, because those who have no understanding of the transcendental nature of Krishna's pastimes always commit great offenses, thinking Krishna to be an ordinary human being and the gopis, ordinary girls. Following the principle of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who never discussed the dealings between Krishna and the gopis publicly, devotees in the Krishna consciousness movement are enjoined not to discuss the pastimes of Lord Krishna in Vrindavan in public. For the general public, Sankirtan is the most effective method to awaken Krishna consciousness. If possible, one should discuss the principles enunciated in Bhagavad Gita. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu followed this principle very strictly and discussed the philosophy of Bhagavad Gita with learned scholars like Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and Prakashananda Saraswati. However, he taught the principles of the bhakti cult to students like Sanatana Goswami and Rupa Goswami, and he discussed with Sri Ramananda Rai the topmost devotional dealings between Krishna and the gopis. For the general populace, he performed Sankirtan very vigorously. We must also follow these principles in preaching Krishna consciousness all over the world. So this is Prabhupada's emphasis, and it should be our emphasis. At the same time, whatever he presents, we can read it in sequence, and sometimes we are brought into confidence of these topics, as in this chapter. And in the fourth chapter of Adi Lila. Anyone have any questions about this? Comments? Yes. Of course, he finally did, but yeah, he really set a different example of resisting by all means, meeting with King Prataparudra, and only with great effort in different stages did the devotees finally bring about a meeting. And here, without any intervening, Lord Chaitanya meets with Ramananda Roy. I don't really know so much why he dealt with one way and one in another way. They're both considered great devotees, but Ramananda Roy would be considered a greater devotee, for sure. So that would be one reason. And I was also appreciating how Lord Chaitanya wanted to go alone on his tour. And in the beginning of this chapter, he was saying how his affectionate devotees, they restricted him from acting as he wanted to act as a sannyasi and to travel. And he not only lived with his intimate devotees, but he lived with many devotees in Jagannath Puri. So in one sense, everything he did was on showcase. And when he went alone, there was a difference. And so it just seemed a very natural thing that he, on the bank of the river, he met Ramananda Roy, and without having to set any example for anybody about not meeting a king, they just came forward and met each other. I think if I was pressed for a short answer, I'd give the first one I gave, that the greatness of Ramananda Roy, what was about to take place, the nature of those talks, was so great that the ecstasy just broke the convention. And so although all devotees are absolute, the relationship with King Prataparudra was not on the same level. And, to put it positively, the Lord always does something with a very important reason. And there was no question of standing on ceremony and not having those talks on the bank of the Godavari, which Bhakti Siddhanta says they're the most significant talks that have taken place in the universe. You know, those talks. So to have missed them because of the convention, it never would happen. The Lord so much desired to talk about that. So that was the force of that meeting. And the other, in a positive sense, he really wanted to impress that, I am a saintly person. I'm living in Jagannath Puri as a sannyasi. I should not meet with the king of Orissa. So they were both very prominent in their positions, the sannyasi and the king of the holy place. So he taught by refusing to see King Prataparudra. Well, he didn't have that much to teach by refusing to see Ramananda Roy. It wasn't so much a lesson that would be gained by everybody. Right.
I was thinking when you were talking about the Lord meeting with Ramananda Rai in a secluded place, and they had their talks on rasa. That in our day-to-day dealings, you know, there are so many different levels on which we deal with people. You know, like I associate with all different types of Vaishnavas, and some of them are not, you know, part of Lord Chaitanya's movement, and some of them, there's not much in common beyond Brahman realization and accepting that the form of Krishna is eternal and so forth. So I was thinking about that, and I was appreciating that we can think in a positive way, you know, about what we have in common, what someone can relate to. So maybe someone on the street, we might relate to them in terms of Brahman realization. You're not the body, you're eternal spirit soul. And then as they become more interested, we can go further and eventually into rasa. What would you say a common understanding?
Yeah, we played a tape excerpt by Prabhupada last night. He was talking about Shaktivisha avatars. And he said, those who are not mentioned in the scriptures, we tell them by their symptom. And the main symptom is eternal versus temporary. He said that they come and they teach the eternal existence of God, and that there is kingdom of God, and that we should go there. So those who do that, they're Shaktivisha avatar. He said, considering this symptom, we accept Jesus Christ and Hazrat Muhammad. So that was like also the positive seeing the common ground that he put there, which is a different subject than saying the need for talking in a secluded place about confidential subjects. That doesn't deny the fact. Rather, Prabhupada said in his purport that Lord Chaitanya, he was very vigorous and very interested in wide preaching on the basics, and he did it. But he didn't do this misuse of using that public forum to inject talks of that weren't proper for that audience. So there's more and more, you could say, proliferation of Gaudiya Vaishnava ideas now in the West. Before it was only Prabhupada. Now following his wake, there are different persons teaching, and they may have different emphasis, and some of it may be to more freely discuss Radha and Krishna. So whatever the difference is, we should stick to the emphasis that Prabhupada gave on presenting Gaudiya Vaishnavism. And that purport kind of summed it up. Oh, just one more, then I'll go on to the letter questions. Yes. Well, he says that this purport, not just in for the mass public, that means whoever wants to come can come. It doesn't matter whether they smoke and drink and have illicit sex. We also want to distribute Krishna consciousness to those persons. So for them, mass sankirtan and prasadam distribution. Maybe not even Bhagavad Gita. Then, he says, for philosophers like Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, Bhagavad Gita. Then, for Sanat Goswami and Bhakti, and Rupa Goswami, Bhakti. You see the teachings to Rupa Goswami and Sanat Goswami. But in the mood of the Gambhira, the mood of Srimati Radharani, that was only for shared with a very small group. So at your point, even among devotees, Lord Chaitanya's example was, even among devotees, this wasn't mostly discussed. And anyway, who's qualified to discuss it? Lord Chaitanya was qualified. He was just finding somebody who was very qualified like him, with whom he could reveal his heart. But we, if we don't have these realizations, then it's not a question of our being able to discuss it when we find a small group. But in any case, we have to speak our realization and not pretend. Or there's no real profit. Then we become that's called Prakriti Sahajya. We have to wait for the qualification to come, then we can understand these things. But there's special mercy in the Prabhupada's books, where if you read them all, then you get everything from copper to touchstone. And they can be discussed also in the right guidance. Okay. Here's some questions that I got as I was explaining where I got these. They were submitted. We were having a series of meetings at Gitanagari. These meetings were disciples' meetings. So the questions, some of them are from that point of view. But I gathered them all for the last meeting that I was supposed to handle them, and then I couldn't attend the last meeting. So I've been answering them here. How can we make our hearts more fortunate, more fertile fields for hearing the teachings of the scriptures? Nice question to even consider. That there's a need for such a thing, that such a thing can be done. We may just think, yes, it's our duty, you're supposed to read the books. Prabhupada said read the books. That it's our education, we have to study, have to go to the Bhagavatam class and so on. But it's not just an act of tapasya. But, aside from that, then the question is how to benefit from them, how to appreciate them and so on. So he's asking, is there a way to make our hearts more fertile so that when we hear them, there'll be a growth of bhakti lata? I can give the answers, but just I think the question itself is a nice contemplation, that there is such consideration. And we should think like that. You can ask yourself the question and give yourself the answers. How can I make my heart more fertile so that when I hear the teachings of the scriptures, the bhakti lata, or the devotional plant, will grow? Some of the obvious things are regular treatment. Like with the plant, if you just keep a plant in the corner of the room and you don't regularly water it and give it sunlight, then you remember, oh, that plant, I have to take care of that plant and pour a lot of water on it or bring it into the sun. That's not how to take care of it. Every day, you go and see how it is, and especially the tulsi, and take off any bugs or things that are going to hurt it and make sure everything... Regular tending and the whole life of goodness and so on, in which the life of reading the scriptures is part of the sadhana. The scriptures describe a spiritual world. It describes the exchanges of Vaishnavas. So we can't come to it in a completely different mode, a mode of passion and ignorance, where we're exploiting people or breaking religious principles and expect to enjoy it. It's not a drunkard's literature. It's not an exploiter's literature. They'll say, what's this? If they look at it. They can't appreciate. So if we're like that, tainted with anything that's not in the nature of the transcendental talks of Krishna and Arjuna, Sutta Goswami and the sages of Namishan, if we want to sit in the field of Namisharanya, and also here we have to be like them. You have to become clean and purified, then you can join in here. I would like to regularly ask myself that question, not just that it's answered once and for all. How can you make your heart fertile for hearing the teachings of the scriptures? I've written a book, Reading Reform, I've written a book, Chanting Reform, Guru Reform, and I feel that I'm... I remember once I was in Mayapur, and it was during japa time, and it was one of my godbrothers, Hridayananda Maharaj, was not only known for his scholarship but for his sense of humor, and he practically broke down my door, and he came in and he said, "I wanted to see what the author of Japa Reform Notebook was doing during the japa period." So I find that I'm just because I've written and made such statements for reform doesn't mean that I've made my ultimate reform. I feel I'm periodically enacting new reading reform, japa reform. So we have to do like that when we see that it's for some reason we may be even busy with other valid services and we find that, oh, I haven't been reading. Then you have to enact another reading reform. And to do it requires sometimes different strategies to deal with your own mind. Sometimes make it as easy as possible on yourself. Not that you assign yourself, "Oh, I haven't been reading. I must read for 2 hours every day, and I'll tackle the toughest book, and I'll take notes." And but do something that you can do, actually. And then gradually maybe you can do more. But start your service with one line even, or touch the book at least. go and bow to the book, and the next day read one word, and then the next day read a sentence. Start your reform. There's a question. You kind of jump from one mood to the other. That's the kind of part of the fun, I guess, of the gamble. Although I have selected which ones I would use, they're still jumping. How should we feel about this Ritvik issue? Sometimes I'm thinking they are malicious, trying to undermine the faith of Prabhupada's grand disciples and in their gurus, who appear to be qualified in terms of being fixed in devotional service and coming in parampara, and that makes me upset. So I'm not going to discuss that in this meeting, but since I realize it's an issue, I recommend that you read an essay that I read recently, recently written by Jai Dwaita Maharaj, in which he really devastates this position of Ritvik philosophy. And so anyone who's interested in that, who wants to read that, Jagasundar, you have a copy of that. He can provide you with a copy of that. Jumping. Poetry. One day in Akiranagri, I read, as I do each year at these disciples' meetings, I read some of my poetry. And I also explained a little about poetry. So this question came from that. Poetry seems to have an underlying hidden meaning, thoughts expressed from the poet's heart. How can a person like myself understand poetry better? As I like the question, the question already contains some realization about what poetry is. Sometimes I think the devotees, they know the answers already, and they're just kindly allowing me to say something. But because it's not ordinary straight communication, but it's like attempt to communicate what can hardly be expressed, like how you feel when you in the morning, maybe when you hear the birds chirping and you feel a nice spring breeze. Now, how do you put that into words? So poetry is an attempt to express what is generally commonly inexpressible, and how it does so, the parts of the are the different methods or strengths of poetic expression. So how to approach it, she's asking. I wrote down a couple of things. Read it more than once, and read it when you're in the mood for it, because they're not things to be just like read like unfortunately we tend to read like the newspaper, or we read newsletters and everything, read them real fast, and people are even taught by books how to read fast. So poetry is just the opposite. It's reading slow, and or reading not just to find out, you know, how to make the machine work, or what is it that they're saying in an obvious sense, but to tune in and use your imagination. Anyway, more could be said, but I think these are good starters, that read poems more than once, and when you're in the mood for them, and we hope that we will be in the mood for it, and that we'll be a little alert that I would like to read some poetry, awaken that part of myself, that sensitivity, because it is it's like a sense that we don't usually use, just like certain muscles you don't use. So a poetic imagination, to read poetry well is just as good practically as writing poetry. So to keep that awake, unfortunately a lot of poetry is very obscure, and so there's nothing, you can read it 10 times, you won't be able to make anything out of it. But it doesn't have to be that way. So we can read poetry that is accessible to us, but it's still poetry. And for us, as we heard last night, Prabhupada says we don't read Tagore or Shakespeare, but we try to read Krishna conscious poetry. Oh, I mean to ask you if you have any questions as I go from one to the other. So any questions? Yes. Yeah, that's very good. Helps to read. Yeah, all readings can be helped by reading out loud, and poetry especially. Can you please suggest how we can become adept at talking Krishna Katha all the time without sounding awkward or artificial or impersonal, meaning disinterested in other devotees and other devotees' situation? That's quite a tall order, to talk Krishna Katha all the time. We could start more modestly by at least making arrangement where you can talk unrestricted Krishna Katha, where it won't be awkward. A time with other devotees or with your family members where you just do that. You can have the book right in your hand, and one person read, and the other person read, and then talk about Krishna. With that setting, then we're expected to talk about Krishna Katha. Start with that. If you're so Krishna conscious that you want to talk Krishna Katha all the time, then go ahead, and you'll have to be ready to appear awkward sometimes. Someone will say, why are you talking about that? Why are you talking about Krishna? We're talking about how to raise finances for the temple. Or, you know, we're talking something practical. People may be annoyed with you, but if you're so inclined to talk about Krishna Katha, then you can just do it anyway and don't mind that they say that. But it should actually flow from you, and not that you bring it up to look clever or something like that. But yeah, the more you can introduce it as examples and so on, by your being immersed in Krishna Katha yourself, then you don't have to worry that it didn't seem to fit in, or somebody thought it was embarrassing that you talked about Krishna, because it is actually the appropriate thing to say, and it does improve the quality of the conversation. So go ahead. I think especially the devotees, although they may be a little awkward, and we may partly be embarrassed or envious that the person was so Krishna conscious as to think of Krishna. I've told that incident, I'll tell it again, that I was on a morning walk with Prabhupada. It was in Europe, I think it was in Geneva, and he was talking, as Prabhupada sometimes talked about worldly things, he was talking about women, the beauty of women in different cultures, and he said the beauty of a Bengali woman is their black hair, their dark eyes. He said there is some literature where there was some English officer and he was commenting on the beauty of the black hair of the Bengali woman, and so one of the devotees, I think it was Yogeswar, he said Krishna also has black hair, Prabhupada. So Prabhupada said, why are you talking about Krishna? He said, we're talking about sense gratification. Prabhupada said. And then he paused and he said, but it is nice, he said, that you have talked about Krishna. And then, this kind of question that is asked, we all know what it means, the awkwardness of the talking about Krishna, where it doesn't seem to fit in a conversation. Suddenly somebody says something like that, you know. Madhu was trying to fix the van and asked somebody to please do this, and someone says, well, Krishna, in Krishna's chariot, we wouldn't have to fix it. And you might get annoyed that he's just being so impractical. But then if you think about it, to think about Krishna's chariot is purifying. But it's sort of a question, you know, it does seem inappropriate. So I was interested in that, what had just happened. So I said to Prabhupada, so that means that even if somebody does introduce Krishna into a conversation awkwardly, then it's all right. And Prabhupada said, yes, it is always good to talk about Krishna. So he sort of approved of that so-called awkward intrusion of Krishna Katha into some other topic. But don't forget that the other talks, they're also Krishna conscious. So sometimes the attempt to talk about Krishna Katha is done by a real neophyte devotee who wants to show how Krishna conscious he is, and as if he's annoyed with other talks and thinks that they're not Krishna conscious, which they are also. I remember Jai Dwaitamar was telling an example. He was riding in the van on going to Sankirtan and from the Brooklyn Temple or something. They went past one of the bridges, and he said, what bridge is that? And one of the devotees said, we're not interested in these bridges. He said, we're interested in the bridge going to the spiritual world. And it was like, sort of like a put down of his your mundane consciousness. But I mean, a devotee can also ask what bridge, you know. And just get a straight answer. It's the Brooklyn Bridge. Oh, I see. You don't have to. So sometimes the pushing for Krishna Katha may be done by somebody who just wants to show off that he's so Krishna conscious and misunderstands that the devotees, they're talking about Krishna, they're thinking about Krishna. So you have to be careful in both ways. We loved Prabhupada because he did both. We loved him because he talked always about Krishna and Krishna consciousness, and then perhaps we loved him even more when he began to talk about, yes, when I was a child in Bengal, or in Calcutta when I was a child, they used to have not electric lights, but carbon lights, and these little, some carbon particle would fall down, and we would collect these, and we'd go on and on talking about different things about boyhood in Calcutta, and we would just love it, because it was a pure devotee talking, the same person who talks about Krishna all the time. Any question about that? Talks without Krishna are dry like the desert. Okay, let's have it. Let's have a live sound of Prabhupada. I've been mostly playing things from 1966, but I heard something today while playing at lunch, and it was real nice. I wanted to play it. It's something you hear Prabhupada say sometimes, where he's talking to the audience, an audience of devotees, and ask young devotees, or Westerners, in this case Americans in Los Angeles, and he's asking them to push on the mission of Krishna consciousness, and he does it in such a personal way, and a heavy way, the heavy responsibility of what he expects us to do. So I think you'll find this really sweet. But it'll also put the responsibility on you as you hear it. Now, when Krishna spoke to Arjuna, he was speaking to everyone. When Prabhupada spoke, he was speaking to this group in front of him, that he wanted them to carry on the work. But he lives in sound, and we can hear it and take it that he's speaking to us now also. But even when in the early days, you can see that Prabhupada, he was hoping that very soon, after practicing just a little bit, devotees would catch up the importance of it and take it as their life's mission. He really hoped that we would be serious about it and that we would understand its importance and carry it on. Not that he was the only bearer of Krishna consciousness, or that, as absurd as it may sound to even state it, that he would live, live way over 100 years old, or that he would keep living and living and living and do it himself. So he mentions that he's not going to be around for so long. You've heard this kind of thing, but I don't think I've stolen from the sweetness by telling you what it is. It'll help you tune into it and just catch some of the subtleties and the personal expression as he puts this onto his audience, which is us.
Well, your responsibility is very great. I'm old man, 75, a few months after I was 75. So, I can pass away any moment. But, the legacy which I am giving to you, you have to live. That's your duty. And you have to create so many sincere devotees who will go from village to village, town to town, and establish center. Center is required. Just like here in Los Angeles, we are trying to establish a nice center. So Krishna has given us the opportunity. We have got a very nice place, such a nice temple, such nice devotees, and sincere workers. Such kind of temples and workers required everything. But it is not at all difficult. That's your experience. I came here empty-handed, gambling, that's the transcendental gambling. I thought, let me go and take a chance. there was no possibility, because as soon as I say the four restrictions, all of them will go out. But Krishna is so kind that he has given me the assistance of so many nice boys and girls. So I am very much thankful to you that you are helping and cooperating. So Krishna will bless you. And my Guru Maharaj will be very much pleased upon you. So you continue this cooperation. Don't stop it. That will be good for the whole human society as well as for you personally. Krishna consciousness is so nice. I remember in one of the Shakespeare books, Merchant of Venice. So when Portia was appealing to Shylock, she was saying, the mercy is so nice that one who accepts, he also becomes satisfied, and one who distributes, he also becomes satisfied.
Very nice. We heard last night Prabhupada was saying scripture is not like Shakespeare, but he quotes Shakespeare and uses it in the service of Krishna. When Jai Dwaita Maharaj gave a seminar, his memories of Prabhupada, he told one time Prabhupada came to New York, he went to Central Park, and they went past the statue of Daniel Webster. And first Prabhupada said, who's that? He said, Daniel Webster. And he said, Daniel has come. And then he said, they said, what, Prabhupada? He said, Daniel has come. And then he began to tell the story of the Merchant of Venice, in which this is a line. And so anyway, some of the devotees were on the walk and some weren't. So when they came back, they said, what did Prabhupada say on the wall? And he said, well, he told the story of the Merchant of Venice. And he said, he told the whole story, the whole play. Really? He said, so what was the point? He said, I don't know. He said, he didn't say anything. He just... So sometimes Prabhupada would just act in inimitable ways of telling something from his childhood or his schooling or something. But this is vintage appeal to us, and he's so grateful. You can see how he makes us want to do this and be pleasing to him and to his Guru Maharaj and to Krishna. Such centers are required everywhere, he said. Make many, many nice devotees. It's not difficult. So wherever there are groups of devotees, Prabhupada is very pleased. Anyone want to say anything about that? Take that excerpt.
Yeah. I was just thinking, hearing Srila Prabhupada say, my Guru Maharaj would be very pleased with all of you. As always, I've appreciated this as such a wonderful quality of Srila Prabhupada. We would always talk about our mission, you know, the mission of my Guru Maharaj, and how if there was any credit, it was if you followed the mission of his Guru Maharaj. And here again,
yeah,
we see the same thing, and I was just thinking that.
He doesn't boast that he's doing it. I'll just play one more, and then we'll have some kirtan. I sometimes explain why I picked these 66 excerpts. This one is a great argument in it. You know, you can use Prabhupada's arguments. So, a great argument, the way he personally expresses, and also the substance of it, why we accept Krishna, his authority, in this case, about belief in the process of offering food to Krishna, and that Krishna takes.
There is one section who are called Arya Samadhists. Their business is only to criticize all the scriptures. That is their business. So, one of the members of the Arya Samadhists, they do not favor the temple worship. So he asked me, Swamiji, do you think God eats? I say, yes. And how do you think? And because God says I eat. Here is Krishna says, Asnami. So God says I eat. So who are you that he does not eat? I replied him like, who are you? You say that God does not eat. But here God says I eat. So whom shall I believe? A loafer like you or Krishna?
Prabhupada said his argument was like karate. Like completely disarm the person, expecting some kind of sophisticated word-juggly discussion. And you just tell him, who should I believe? Who are you? Should I believe you? A loafer like you or Krishna? And it's not just like a rude put down. It's just like it's just a perfect sense. And nobody can measure up to the authority of the speaker of Bhagavad Gita and Krishna. And he says, "I eat." Who are you?